What we want to do is make people accidental environmentalists. You did something good for the earth without even realizing it.
Over 90% of carpets today are made of synthetic fiber linked to carbon emissions. Over 4 billion pounds end up in landfills each year. How can a carpet, your carpet, become carbon negative?
Innovation, as we look for new and more recycled materials, we can really reach a point where we're actually carbon negative. Since 2003, we have offset 6.5 million metric tons of carbon.
What will it take to go to zero?
Well, I think...
Meet Liz Minet, head of global sustainability strategy at Interface.
The commercial flooring solutions manufacturer named one of Time 100 most influential companies in 2023.
Interface is one of today's foremost environmentally sustainable and restorative businesses in the world.
You are very reliant on suppliers being transparent. How do you get them to account for emissions?
We have a code of conduct that our suppliers sign on to. We look at our factories to make it so that we are as good as the environment.
Your competitors are latching on to this. Is this something that you welcome?
We want everyone to be motivated to make a more sustainable world. Over 5,000 companies now have signed up to science-based targets. We're really able to see a future where we can be carbon negative.
How will this be done?
So we're gonna... We'll be phasing out and focusing on.
Welcome to EcoGradia, where we meet experts and practitioners at the front lines of sustainable architecture and urbanism. My name is Nirmal Krishnani. I'm a sustainable design strategist, author, and educator based in Singapore. Green manufacturers, the one with big claims, seem to be everywhere these days, coming out of the woodwork all at once. But it's difficult to scratch the surface and see through the spiel. The making of a building or a product even is complex enough. The question is how to do it sustainably. Well, the goal, I reckon, requires commitment, leadership, and perseverance in equal measures. Not many companies can foot that bill. The ones that do, these movers and shakers, are members of an exclusive club. One of them is Interface, the global flooring solutions manufacturer. These guys have been at it for a very long time, more than 5 decades, in fact. The founder, Ray Anderson, charted a course for sustainability in the 90s. Since then, Interface has set a great example in walking the talk and knowing the pros and cons, the ins and outs of turning environmental targets into competitive advantages and a profitable portfolio. And so my guest today, Liz Minet, Interface's head of global sustainability strategy, is here to spill the beans, address what lies ahead still, and announce the big move that Interface is about to make. You may want to hear this and see for yourself what engagement looks like. This is our first content partnership episode through which leading manufacturing and consulting companies are invited to talk about specific products and services and in the process support the podcast. But before we start, let me quickly remind you that you can get more out of this episode on our website at ecogradia.com, where you'll find curated images and notes that top up what's being discussed today. And if you like what you hear, please hit the follow button on your preferred podcast directory to never miss an episode. Season 4 of EcoGradia is sponsored by the Holcim Foundation for Sustainable Construction. The foundation was created in 2003 to empower a community of future makers through the transfer of ideas, knowledge, and real-world solutions. Check out past winners of the Holcim Awards from all over the world, plus events and publications at holcimfoundation.org. That's H-O-L-C-I-M, foundation, one word, .org. And now, Liz Minet. Welcome to EcoGradia, Liz. Thank you so much for making the time to be with me today.
Thanks for having me. So glad to be here.
Yesterday was Earth Day, and so I think our chat today is perhaps all the more significant. Let me start with a little context here. Greenhouse gas saturation in the atmosphere currently is 4 to 1 parts per million, the highest that it's been in 3 million years. You, as a company, seek to reverse the trend by pulling carbon out of the atmosphere. How will this be done? I mean, over 90% of carpets today are made of synthetic fibers, such as, you know, nylon, polypropylene, or polyester. These are petrochemical-based raw materials that are linked to carbon emissions. How can a carpet, your carpet, become carbon negative?
We at Interface have really taken the chance to dive into innovation. And one of the amazing things that we came out with actually in 2020, and what a year to come out with it, right? In the midst of the COVID pandemic, was this carbon negative carpet tile. And That's incredible. The carpet tile is carbon negative from what's called cradle to gate. So that's all of the raw materials that go into that carpet, all of the manufacturing that takes place. At the point where it's then sold to the customer, it's carbon negative. And we did that by looking for unique materials, bio-based materials that are sequestering carbon in the atmosphere, and then we're able to take those materials and store them long-term in our products. So yes, we certainly are, there are a lot of different materials within our products, but as we look for new and different materials to integrate and also focus on looking for more recycled materials over time, we can really reach a point where we're actually carbon negative, and we've proven that.
You're talking about very specific parts of the carpet, are you not? There is this bio-based material is applied to the backing.
The backing of our carpet tile is where we're using those stored materials that are storing carbon long-term. But what we're able to do is those are so carbon negative that all of the other materials within that product, and that's heavily leaning on increasingly recycled products and the lowering footprint of those. Even with those other products that have some amount of footprint, we can still achieve carbon negativity for the carpet tile overall. And that's our Sequest Bio X backed products. Those are carbon negative overall, including all materials.
So the backing is the bit that has the bio-based material. Where's the recycled content going?
We look for yarn that has a very high recycled content. That comes in a number of forms. We work really heavily with our suppliers to get high recycled content yarn. So they might be taking that from old carpet, old, you know, clothes, other textiles, or it can also come from, we had a wonderful effort that was done called Networks, where they were taking rogue fishing nets in the waterways and collecting those, packaging those down, and then recycling that so that we have what was absolutely a waste and actually an environmental hazard becoming a recycled product in our products now.
So many companies, when they talk of carbon neutrality, it appears they can only reach these targets by buying credits or offsets. Sometimes it's easier to sponsor, say, a wind-based power plant in India than to innovate manufacturing in a factory. How much of Interface's emissions today are offsets?
What I can tell you is that over our long history in the offset market, since 2003 up to 2022, we have offset 6.5 million metric tons of carbon. A great example of that is our carpet tile. We've been working on that for 30 years, and we've seen that our reduction in carbon footprint for our carpet tile has gone down about 79%. Over those 30 years. And then that remainder that was left is what we were offsetting. So it's a big number that we've offset over the years, but it could have been even bigger.
I get that you've brought the numbers down, but there was also a promise that these would be phased out. Do we have a timeline for that?
Yes, we do. We have decided to make the pivot away from using carbon offsets, which was always an interim strategy for us. And we're looking to do that by April, this April. So the month that we're in, the end of this month, we'll be phasing out our carbon neutral programs and focusing on further innovation internally.
Wow, that is an announcement. So you are saying basically as of April 2024, you will no longer have carbon offsets. And the carbon neutrality promise that you've made will come purely through innovation.
That's correct. So we're going to further invest within our business using that funding that we were using towards carbon offsets and really driving down into those research and innovations and work with our supply chain so that we can drive down our impacts in terms of their actual emissions. So no offsets.
What kind of innovations are in the pipeline that will get rid of offsets? Do you have an idea of what you're going to do?
We are highly focused on those interesting raw materials that I mentioned. So we have these bio-based materials and also carbon sequestering materials, either through natural processes or mechanical processes that we can start to integrate into our products and make sure they're stored long term. And that's how we feel we can begin to crack the code across the board for our products to drive them towards carbon neutrality and even further carbon negative.
Let's deep dive a little bit into the numbers. Yeah, I think the emissions numbers of your carpet, in my research, I found that in the 90s, it was close to 20 kilograms of carbon dioxide per square meter of carpet tile, something like that.
We're just doing the numbers for 2023 and it's 3.7, which brings us to 82%.
82%. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me what changes have been made to the design and manufacturing process to reduce the carbon footprint. I mean, break it down for me. You talked a little bit about the backing, the bio-based backing, which is a relatively new innovation. But this has been happening over several decades now. So what have been the steps leading up to this?
It has absolutely been a journey. And I think where we started was looking at the ways that we could reduce waste. Because if you think about it, waste is really carbon emissions that aren't serving a purpose. So we looked at our operations and our supply chain and our installation as well. So what are the ways that we can make sure that every product that we're bringing in, every raw material that we're bringing in is going to a good use case. And so we've really started to minimize the amount of waste within our products. That was step one for us. And that was what we would say is sort of the low-hanging fruit at the beginning of our journey. Mm-hmm. And then I think beyond that, we've worked really closely and collaboratively with our supply chain, moving them towards more recycled materials, and then even expanding our supply chain to look at these bio-based materials so that now actually overall, if you look at our whole product portfolio, mm-hmm. 52% of the materials within those products are recycled or bio-based. So we've really flipped the script on how we make our products going from virgin materials to highly, highly recycled and bio-based materials over time.
What will it take to go from 3.7 to zero?
We've already proven that we can do it. So with our carbon negative carpet tile, we have proven that we can bring that number to a negative number by looking at those unique bio-based materials or maybe in the future, even these new carbon sequestering materials that capture carbon in a mechanical way. And then we can use those within our backing to further drive down the impact. We're also interested in just continuing to reduce all of those other little impacts that we have across the board. We know that raw materials is most significant for us at Interface. But there are other impacts that we need to address in order to reduce that, including things like operations. We also have science-based targets around our employee commuting and business travel. So those are two other areas that we're looking at.
You mentioned carbon capture. Is that in the pipeline?
We're very interested in working with suppliers who are doing this carbon capture work and producing materials, raw materials out of that work.
So what we've been talking about really are referred to as scope one emissions. These are the emissions that arise from what you do in your operations, right? Scope two are the emissions arising from the power that you purchase. And this will be from suppliers in the places where you have factories and offices. I checked online your website. You have manufacturing plants in Australia, in China, USA, Northern Ireland, and the Netherlands. The way that these countries produce power varies quite a bit. Australia and China are still heavily reliant on coal. According to a 2022 report, the generation factor for the Australian grid is 0.68 kilograms of CO2 equivalent per kilowatt hour. China is 0.56. This is double what is happening in the US, 0.33. Netherlands is 0.37, and Ireland 0.38. How would you get to carbon negative if you manufacture in places like China and Australia where electrical power is so carbon intensive?
What we have done is we have made sure that when we're sourcing energy, we're sourcing from renewable sources. So actually 100% of our manufacturing operations are covered by renewable electricity. And we've gone even further and have sourced renewable natural gas in several locations. So across the board for our manufacturing, 79% of our energy use is coming from renewable sources.
If the goal is to reduce carbon, why not move production to places like Sweden, you know, where the generation factor is 0.008, which is 1% that of China or Australia? I mean, wouldn't it make more sense to produce it in countries where the energy grid factor is incredibly low?
Well, I think there's certainly a number of trade-offs in any decisions. And that's certainly a factor as we look at where we're located. But I think we're invested in those locations based on where those products are going to. So transportation is, of course, another impact to consider as we make sure we're delivering to our global customers.
Right.
And I think that Interface likes to be a source of outsized impact. So how can we also impact the places that we're in to motivate change to lower impacts? And I think that we see that by, you know, we're investing in renewable sources in those locations so that we can clean up those grids as much as is within our power.
That's a really interesting statement of how it is that you impact the locations where you're in. Give me an example of how that has transpired in the past.
We've invested in renewable energy sourcing at all of our locations and trying to bring the grid cleaner. But there are also some really interesting things that we've looked at over the years, including what's called factory as a forest. So we've looked into how could we create a factory that is indistinguishable from the forest that would have been there, or, you know, whatever ecosystem would have been there had that factory not been in place. So what are the impacts of a forest? What kind of water is it infiltrating in that location? What kind of habitat is it providing for birds, bees, other species? What sort of solar gain is happening there? And how can we look at our factories to make it so that we are as good as the environment that would have been there had our factory not been built?
Nigel Stansfield, who I interviewed last season, talked about factory as a forest. Nigel is, of course, the Chief Innovation and Sustainability Officer at Interface. We had an interesting conversation about the legacy of Interface, and he explained the factory as a forest as a as a new model of production. Interestingly, this is happening in Australia then, isn't it? I mean, the place with the highest emissions and generation factor for the energy grid.
So we started looking at how we could do that in our Minto factory in Australia. And we've also looked at how we could apply that in our factory in the US. And it's certainly a methodology as we continue to tweak and build parts of our infrastructure in various locations that every time we do, we're thinking about how can we be more aligned with nature.
Mm. Let's talk a little bit about scope 3 emissions. And these are perhaps the hardest for a manufacturer to tackle. I mean, these are the emissions by companies that you engage with up and down the value yes. chain, such as your suppliers. So let's talk about suppliers. What are the raw materials used in interface products currently? Just break it down for me.
There are a number of key materials that we use within our various products. And I think, so for example, for carpet, we've talked a lot about yarn. Yarn is a key material, and it's also a driver of carbon footprint for us. So that's a key material that we focus on in carpet. And then in rubber, we think about the natural and synthetic rubber and working with those suppliers to continue across the board, you know, all of our raw material suppliers. How can we reduce our impact in those key sectors? Mm.
Give me an example of a material that's been abandoned in favor of one that has lower impact.
All of the carpet that we made in Europe was backed with a bitumen backing.
Mm-hmm.
And we, as we move to this carbon negative carpet tile, we actually are completely off that bitumen backing in Europe and have completely transformed to standardizing our product on this Sequest backing. So that's that backing that has the bio-based material as part of that recipe within it. So right. no longer dependent on the bitumen for our entire European carpet operation.
Right. What about transportation? I mean, how, you know, your suppliers are going to move products and how do you get them to account for emissions due to transportation?
We have a very detailed life cycle assessment process where we work with our key suppliers and identify what are called hotspots. So where we can really drive the most impact, what is most impactful for our business. We have found that the raw materials themselves make up about 50% of our overall impact across the board. When we're looking at those scope 1, 2, and 3 across the board, most of it's coming from our raw materials. Transportation is certainly a piece of it. It tends to be in the, you know, 5-ish% of our overall impact. So it's something that we're asking our suppliers to be cognizant about, and we want to drive that lower. But we're really keenly focused on driving down impact within our materials as far as possible, as we know that's our biggest hotspot.
So much of what the suppliers do then has an impact on your final carbon tally. How do you go about selecting a supplier?
We have a code of conduct that we make sure that our suppliers sign on to, and that's ensuring that they're meeting all of our guidelines in terms of environmental needs, regulatory needs, all of those sort of make sure they're meeting the baseline of what is required for to interact with Interface. But I think beyond that, we do have a process where we're looking at that life cycle assessment of the materials. So that's their impact, their environmental impact over their life, and we're selecting materials specifically that have lower impacts so that we can drive down our own impact, knowing that's where most of our impact comes from.
Right. But you are very reliant on suppliers being transparent in what they do in accounting for their emissions. How do you manage these conversations with suppliers in countries where regulations are lax or transparency is not the norm?
In areas where the regulations may not be as strict, I mean, we're certainly ensuring that they sign on to our code of conduct and are following that code of conduct. I think that we also want to have a very collaborative relationship with our suppliers. And so we have quarterly meetings with key suppliers and meet up with them to make sure that we're aligned on what they're delivering.
Mm. The requirements for transparency are not the same, for instance, as in Europe or parts of North America. And I'm wondering, for instance, what you do when you're dealing, say, in Asia. I mean, there are, you have manufacturing in Asia. How do you deal with suppliers in Asia?
We address this in a number of different ways. So sometimes as it might be the carrot or it might be the stick. Mm. So we try and work with our suppliers as much as possible, incentivizing them to give us more transparency and more data. So one of the ways that we do that is through that process that we've talked about, the life cycle assessment, where we're asking them to provide things like their emissions and their emissions attributed to us. That takes a lot of work. And so we've partnered to bring information to them so that they're educated on that and are incentivizing we're choosing suppliers over other suppliers if they're willing to provide that sort of information. If they aren't, then we're certainly open to looking to the right suppliers who want to work with us on driving down our impacts.
I'd like to pause a minute to remind everyone that you can find images and notes to get more out of this episode at ecogradia.com. There you can also learn more about our Season 4 sponsor, the Holcim Foundation for Sustainable Construction. The foundation is at heart a global community of professionals and academics. Since its beginnings in 2003, the foundation has identified and nurtured leading thinkers and talents in the field of sustainable architecture, design, engineering, and construction across generations and geographies. This community today is immense and impressive, a vast network of practitioners, educators, and specialists who seek out an exchange of ideas and information. And the space where this all happens is created and sustained by the foundation, powered by awards, events, and publications. The ambition of the foundation is nothing less than sustaining life on Earth by finding ways to transform what and how we build for the good of all. Go to holcimfoundation.org to find out more. Let's talk a little bit about what happens with downstream management. So apart from sourcing, there's also the question of end of life. Products and materials, what happens when they are no longer in need? Yeah. I mean, there's a statistic that's quite shocking that over 4 billion pounds of carpets end up in landfills each year in the US alone. And so the question of landfills and waste, Interface has declared its commitment to divert waste by recycling and repurposing products, what was commonly referred to as a circular economy. What has Interface achieved so far on this front?
Our post-consumer carpet that came back through this process in 2022 was 4.3 million pounds, and that's in 1 year. So that's 1 year's worth of carpet that amount we're keeping out of the landfill. Mm. Very, very important. And I think the other thing to note about this is that this is highly reliant on customers returning that product back to us.
Right.
Because if we aren't able to get that back, then we can't make sure it serves a better purpose, whether that's reuse or recycling through our processes.
What would be the agreement like with a customer? Would you automatically buy back a carpet that you have supplied to them? Do they have to pay for removal of the carpet? I mean, there is cost involved in retrieval and managing it. So who bears that cost?
It depends. But I would say that if it's a great volume of carpet, then it's very worthwhile for us to bring that back down. We actually reuse this carpet in our own processes. So we'll chop it up into itty bitty pieces and put it into our backing. So it becomes a raw material for us.
Right.
That post-consumer content, we're interested in recovering that back. There are certainly logistical challenges, though, because, there might be borders that have to be crossed. And is it considered a waste material? We're certainly running against that in Europe, where waste can't be transported over border to border. And even though we might use it in our next process, is it considered waste? So that's sort of a tricky boundary to navigate. But using that product is interesting to us, and making sure it's at a volume or, further as we look at collaboration, is there a way that we can collect more in one place before it's transported back to make sure we aren't adding transportation emissions?
But is that a guarantee that's given to a customer at the point of purchase, that if they decide to buy an Interface carpet, that Interface will down the road buy it back from them or take it back from them? What does that agreement look like?
We do agree that we will take back the carpet at the end of its life. And so after that, it's a matter of the logistics of getting it back. But I think what makes it particularly challenging in our industry is, someone might specify that will happen. And then that may not be the owner of that space. Someone else may be moving into that space. And then the owner of that space 3 years down the line, 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, decides that they're going to lease a different space, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Does the customer who's then moving into the space with our carpet or our LVT or rubber flooring then know where that came from and how we can return it to us? That part gets a little bit trickier because they may not know it's Interface carpet and that they can call us up and send that back.
The Interface brand is focused heavily on carbon and environmental impact. How much does this actually matter to the customer? Many developers and manufacturers that I speak with, they will say that the buyers will like the idea in theory, but in practice, this is not a primary consideration. So Liz, if we could, let's discuss choice from a customer's perspective.
There are so many factors that a customer might choose between as they're looking at products. Of course, cost is one of them. Performance is a key factor. We feel design is often a key factor, innovation and sustainability. So all of these factors are at play. And I think it depends somewhat on the customer what might tip the scale.
Right.
A great example of that in play is that Salesforce was actually trying to meet their net zero goals, and they announced success on that. They announced they reached their net zero emissions across their value chain in 2021, and they actually pointed to the fact that they chose a very low embodied carbon footprint carpet in Interface to help them reach that goal. So I think that's a great case of where sustainability was certainly a factor and an important factor for them in their decision-making process.
Who is Salesforce and what kind of an operation are they?
Salesforce is an organization that provides customer-related software. So Salesforce selected us as their flooring standard across their global real estate portfolio. So that's not just in the U.S., not just in Europe, but we're actually their standard. And that's really because of our low carbon footprint of our products. Mm. And I think, you know, they're a big global brand and them making that decision is meaningful in all of those towers that they build. And then the ripple effect that that has beyond us is that, you know, they're selecting product with lower carbon footprint in these towers, and that means less emissions overall.
Mm. Was this regulatory compliance or was this corporate policy? I'm just trying to understand what was driving this decision.
I think what we're seeing from a number of big global brands is that they're keenly interested in meeting their own climate goals. So those might be science-based targets. We're seeing over 5,000 companies now have signed up to science-based targets, and we are one of them as well. And we're seeing that those brands, in order to meet their goals by 2030, by 2040, by 2050, need to reduce their impacts.
Salesforce clearly sounds like a global player with a huge footprint. I'm curious to hear how the same conversation might have taken place in a developing economy with a local player.
I think with all of our customers, the priorities are different. So they, like I said earlier, it might be cost, it might be performance, it might be innovation. So we see that all of these things are at play. In terms of other countries, the ratio of how important those are certainly might change. Mm. When it comes to sustainability, whether or not that's a factor for our customers, what we want to do is make people accidental environmentalists. So you did something good for the earth without even realizing it.
I love that phrase, accidental environmentalist. Many architects, for example, are not accidental environmentalists. They would want to be in a position where they make the right, the ethical choice, but they are confronted by an ecosystem where pricing is valued more than anything else. How would an architect operating out of, say, Indonesia, present an interface product to their client?
When I'm thinking towards those customers, we're bringing education to a number of customers who maybe just don't even know the lingo yet, embodied carbon or life cycle assessment, bringing that information to them. We're not just educating our customers on how choosing our carpet or our LVT or rubber can help them reduce their impact, but it's the whole built environment. We know that the built environment is around 40% of the GHG emissions of the world. So knowing that, what kind of education can we give them so that when they're looking to specify products, they can make sure that they're making choices that have long-term positive impacts rather than long-term negative impacts.
Let me ask you a bigger question. So Interface has been at this, since the 90s. The Mission Zero started with Ray Anderson in the 90s. And year on year, you've kind of chipped away at the waste question, the greenhouse gas emission question, the water question. Is there a way to summarize what has been the net impact of the company over that period?
It's such a big and important question, Irma. I think that what we came out with at the end of Mission Zero, we had a report called Lessons Learned that really talked about how we brought our impact as low as possible. But I think what's more fascinating, and albeit harder to measure, is the ripple effect of Interface, because we started this journey 30 years ago when very few others were on this mission, and really brought it to the forefront. And then we saw other big players latch onto that and look for what could they be doing. And I think one of the big players explored in that report is Walmart, who actually brought us in to take what we had learned and start to apply those sort of learnings to their supply chain to see how they could make a much, much more sizable in terms of their overall impact, because they're a much larger company. Take those impacts and go well beyond our borders.
I Googled carbon neutral carpets before I came onto this interview, and I found your competitors are latching on to this. I mean, is this something that you welcome?
We love to be that inspiration. And I think we have found our impact is outsized because our competitors have been trying to catch up to where we are. And I think that's also a motivation for us to continue to be in front as much as possible. Mm. If our competitors start losing out jobs to Interface because of our sustainability story, that motivates them to look into their own sustainability stories and make further investments. And I think at the end of the day, that's what we want. We want everyone to be motivated to make a more sustainable world.
Mm. Last question, Liz. What is it that gives you and your colleagues at Interface hope for the future?
I think about three key things that are really giving me hope right now. And the first is that 5,000 plus companies are now signed up to science-based targets. So they're committed to reducing their impacts in a very public way, making sure that they reduce their impacts in line with the Paris Agreement. So I think that's number one for me. Number two is looking at this young generation, which is giving me a lot of hope because they are increasingly interested in lowering their impact, their negative carbon impact, increasing their positive impacts year on year, and motivated to commit to those actions and even commit their dollars in that way versus other ways. And then I think just the innovation is moving so rapidly. That's my third. So innovation, we're looking to our supply chain and others at these really new compelling materials that weren't there before. And I think that's a key part of our pivot right now, is now that there are more materials available for us to invest in terms of these bio-based materials, carbon sequestering materials. With that available, we're really able to see a future where we can be carbon negative on our own without the need for offsets.
Wonderful. Liz Minnie, thank you so much for your time. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Nirmal.
I'd also like to thank you all for tuning in. There is much more about this episode waiting to be unpacked at ecogradia.com, where you can also find all past episodes, their images and notes on dedicated pages from season one up to now. If you enjoyed today's conversation and have yet to do so, please click on the follow button on your preferred podcast directory. Your simple click can make a huge difference and help this channel grow bigger, stronger, and better. Do follow us on Instagram and LinkedIn and subscribe to our newsletter to know first what's coming up next.
Helping us on this journey is our sponsor for season 4, the Holcim Foundation for Sustainable Construction. And the foundation is a leading organization whose sole mission is to promote a new way of thinking and acting in the design construction sector globally. Their goal is to give you the resources you need to make your own journey towards sustainability a little easier. Go to holcimfoundation.org to find out more. Finally, a big thank you to the team who put this episode and related content together. Maxim Flores, Narel Yabuka, Tyler Yeo, Kruti Choksi Kothari, Sana Gupta, Annette Phlogiston, Alexander Melk, Calvin Brown, Gelo Muguruka, Madeline Myberg, Stian van Wyk. Thank you, guys. Until we meet next, this is Nirmal Kishnani signing off in Singapore.